हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, Chapter 6, The Meeting of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Raghunath Das Goswami. Page 127, verses 155 to 213. Raghunath Das successfully escapes Jagannath Puri, 36155 to 162. From that day on, he did not go into the inner section of the house. Instead, he would sleep on the Durga Mandap, the place where Mother Durga was worshipped. The Durga Mandaps, you have the courtyard. Then one end of the courtyard, because you have the courtyard that's down, then it goes up, whereas the veranda of the house. So at one end of that, it's a little bit bigger, or it can be both. Then you have the mandapas there. That's where any special deity worship and everything, festivals, you all have it in that place. Deities come out and everything.
It seems standard.
Yeah, it's standard.
No, but it seems standard that wealthy people who have that kind of house will worship Durga or not.
That's pretty, I mean, we're talking about Bengal.
Yeah, Bengal, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, any deities could come out there. Means any, if you're having Janmashtami, the deities would come there. It's just somehow they call the Durga Mandap.
Oh, okay.
Like that. Whether Durga is the one that would come there or not, but if you know, it's very common because all will be worshipping. But those who are Vaishnavas may or may not, but then their festivals, the idea is that in the courtyard, because people can come in, you can have things, you can distribute, like that, it becoming a mess doesn't affect the house, because the verandas are raised. It'd be like, let's say this is the courtyard, this room, and where the walls are, it goes up, you know, let's say like this much or something like that, and then you have your veranda around. And so then one end's bigger, where you can, many times it's already a built kind of like Sringasan, and the deities come. Or it can just be an area where then they bring the deities out. But it's meant for festivals, public, you know, public means, you know, whoever your guests are. The regular deity worship wouldn't be there. That'll be in the temple, you know, wherever that is in the house. But in the Durga Mandap, have you ever, remember the old kitchen? It had a courtyard like that and veranda like that.
Mm. So it means that the house that was occupied by the Muslim ruler who tried to destroy Haridas Thakur, he was obviously occupying the house of a Hindu because he had a Durga Mandap in his house.
It's just... means if you look at it, all the means, yeah, they're calling it that. It would be, but it's also, you see, all old buildings were like that, because, I mean, even in Europe, the old ones were all, they all had courtyards.
Yes.
No one means you have a thinner building around a major courtyard, and because that place could be used for
multi-purpose.
Yeah, multi-purpose. That's the whole point. So it would be a standard thing. But there's a good chance it was, you know, that's just how they built it, and that's what they called it, you know.
Right, that's what they called it.
Yeah.
He mentioned Lord Nityananda. He said, you can't stay here at the Durga Mandap. You can leave. You can go and sleep in a cow shed. Oh, really? So that's the term they use, the Durga Mandap.
Yeah, like that.
I always wondered.
Because they're all Vaishnavas here, so it's not necessarily they're worshiping Durga, but it's just called that, you know, that area there. You know, it means it's the courtyard, but it's not, because you can have a courtyard that doesn't have the verandas, covered verandas, because these are covered verandas. You know? So that means on that lower floor, the rooms are going to be smaller because of that veranda. The upper floors, they may have a veranda or not. You know, if they do it also, it's nice because you get the air, the light. That way you're getting air and light without being exposed to the public. You can have a big festival inside without it being... You have a door. You can close the door. You don't have to worry about somebody's going to, you know, crash your party. You know, and that's when you come in, you also see all the seats there on both sides. So then, you know, if there's any gays, you can sit there and discuss things. You know, people come from outside. Let's say you're having... somebody come for doing some work, you talk with them there. They don't have to come in the house, but at the same time they come into your house because you're right there, so you can get water or, you know, refreshments or, you know, anything like that can be brought to that point. And if something's more, then you might take it farther inside and all that. So that's how in Bengal they would do it. Like in South, and they have the front part of the house, that's the first part, it's covered, but it's kind of open. And that would be then where guests and stuff like that. Then the second one would be like Julon and things like that. So it would be for a little bit more like this. Then you get into the inside of the house. But the kitchen would be close to the front so you can bring things out. But once you go past that, then no guests go back there. Unless they're family or very close people or something like that. I don't know if they do that now, but the old houses were like that. The doors, you just have these doors going all the way through, you know, one after another after another. Like that, but here, then the open verandas and that. Even in the villages, they don't. It's not one building. There'll be separate buildings, but it'll be built around the courtyard. There'll be a big courtyard, and then you know, you'll have the main house there. You have the kitchen. You have other houses, and also there might be four or five houses all around that big courtyard. You can do things there. The kids can play there. It means you process your grains there. You know, any harvest comes in, it's put there to dry. You know, you can manage it and everything like that. You know, then there'll be the houses, then there'll be some area around, and then there's, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, the moat. And it just means that there's a dip where any excess rain can go into that and go out. So your place never gets wet. You know, it doesn't get waterlogged. So, yeah. There, however, the watchman alertly kept guard. Raghunatha, because he's a little bit more outside, so then, you know, what's the reason? Raghunatha Das was thinking of various means by which to escape their vigilance. At that time, all the devotees of Bengal were going to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Raghunatha Das could not accompany them, for they were so famous that he would have been caught immediately. Right, because they'd go there and just, you know, he'd be there in the crowd because they can only move so fast. Thus, Raghunatha Das thought deeply about how to escape. And one night, while he was sleeping on the Durga Mandap, the priest Yadunandan Acharya entered the house when only four dandas, 96 minutes, remained until the end of night. Yadunandan Acharya was the priest and spiritual master of Raghunatha Das. Although born in a Brahmin family, he had accepted the mercy of Vasudeva Dutta. Yadunandan Acharya had been officially initiated by Advaita Acharya. Thus he considered Lord Chaitanya his life and soul. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that although the atheists who have deviated from the order of Sri Advaita Acharya introduce themselves as followers of Advaita Acharya, they do not accept Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Yadunandan Acharya, one of the most confidential followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was the initiated disciple of Advaita Acharya. He was not polluted by sentimental distinctions classifying Vaishnavas according to birth. Therefore, although Vasudeva Dutta had not been born in a Brahmin family, Yadunandan Acharya also accepted him as his spiritual master. Right. Yeah, because the basically you see is that, I think it explains at one point, then Advaita Acharya had six sons, so three headed by Achyutananda. Then they were Vaishnavas, but the other three had become impersonalists. Because you have that aspect that Lord Shiva tends to be the deity of the impersonalists, the Maya bodies and that. And so then they'll take it that line and say he's supreme and they're not into Vaishnavism. At the same time, ultimately, everything's impersonalist, so it's a real mushmash like that. So he's following Advaitacharya, but he's following of those who accept Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And what's the connection with Vasudevdatta?
Here is because Vasudev Datta. Datta means then they would be, that's generally be Vaishyas. But he's accepted him as a spiritual master, even though he's born in a Brahmin family. And so for the Smartas and others, they would look down on this. But he didn't, he's not worried about it. Yes?
It seems during those times that the distinction between the Diksha and Shiksha relationship wasn't it wasn't an issue for anybody. Means everybody had diksha, that we know from the description.
Yeah.
And the instruction from whoever it came at a particular time, I mean, the line should be followed, as you explained.
Mm-hmm.
But then, Yadunanda Acharya, we hear from him once, and then it's all Swarup Damodar Goswami. The old Shiksha, not even Mahaprabhu, because as soon as he comes, he says, okay, he's your man. And then he gives him two shloka of instructions. It's gonna come up.
Raghunath Das.
Yeah,
yes.
And then that's it. And then everything else he got from Swarup Damodar Goswami, which is his Shiksha Guru.
Mm-hmm.
So during those time, it wasn't, like you say, clear cut.
Means that at least in how it's used in America, clear cut kind of means that it's
black and white.
It's not clear cut means there's something unknown or it's foggy or something like that. I would say so. Means there's no discrimination. That would be the thing. So like that aspect, you could say. But I think your first one, where it's not made a prominence, means you have your Diksha Guru, and if your Diksha Guru happens to be your prominent Siksha Guru, then that fine works like that. But if he's not, then wherever the Siksha, because it always has to be remembered, it's the Siksha that's the real thing. You know, the most important. The Pancharatrik Diksha becomes very important for the conditioned soul. Because of conditioning, they have to have that kind of regulation. And so, therefore, you see, as everybody in the Vaishnava line, say they use it. It's standard. But technically, if you're an Uttamadhikari, it means you're liberated, not just you think you are, but you're liberated, then just hearing instructions. So that's how the six Goswamis are direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya,
right?
Because of having heard from him. He instructed them. But that further instruction in that's going to take place from other Siksha Gurus. So, one of the symptoms of as the consciousness or the perspective or understanding of the process is lower or less developed is the more emphasis on diksha. That's why you'll see is that in the Goswami lines, it's purely about diksha. It's you're Nityananda Vamsa or this one or that one, and so they're totally into that kind of aspect, and so they don't really appreciate our line because it's siksha. Because all the ones that we mentioned, then basically speaking, none of them are the one before them. That's not their Diksha Guru.
Yeah.
Like that. We see with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then the two have been brought together. Like that. And it also makes it a lot easier and all that. At least it's in one place. But in the others, that could be from here and from there, and so many different things, means your lines are different. They're all Gaudiyas, but So in one, you're looking for the purity of the mantra. So if that's there, then that's an okay source for the initiation. But for the siksha, then you have to go where that's pure. So then we see with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you're trying to bring that the mantra's purity and the siksha and the instructions purity are on the same platform. So then you don't have to worry about going here and there. So that's a great boon for us, because as it is, even with that being brought together, we still can't really see the importance of one and the other and all that. But at least if they put the emphasis on the diksha, and they stay true to the line and try to follow the order, then they'll advance nicely. rather than if they say, oh, that doesn't matter, we're siksha, and then not listen to the siksha. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that they're getting siksha, and it's only from their diksha guru, and they don't and ignore everybody else, but at least then they have the proper pancharatra connection, and they're getting proper siksha. Is that?
Yeah.
Now, if they, if and if that's very complete, then that's very nice, very easy. But at the same time, so many senior Vaishnavas are there, then naturally you're going to be inspired hearing this one and that one and so many things. Somebody gives a nice class, you're going to make a nice point, then you know you'll be able to use that in your life. So someone who can accommodate like that, then that's going to be better. Right? You know, we're talking about in the society in the context of this morning's song.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
All right. I don't have an example precisely right now, but in the Vedic culture, people take initiation from a diksha or could be, let's say, a family of a village guru.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a connection.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly what line that is. Then later on, they take shiksha from a Vaishnava.
Mm-hmm.
So, if the connection from the diksha is different in the line than the connection from the shiksha, is that an impediment?
No. I mean, it wasn't an impediment for Baladeva Vidyabhusha, so. Main point is that the mantra is pure and the instructions are pure. Right? And but at the same time is we don't know the definition of that, so we follow in the footsteps of how the acharyas have given it.
Yeah.
So then Prabhupada's given the process, and that we follow that, it works very nicely.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Because before is that when they were getting they would be initiated as Brahmins. So it means they're initiated by the Vedic rite, which means Upanayanam. Which simply means that first Brahma Gayatri. They didn't have the other Pancharatra Gayatris. So then by hearing the siksha, then it would work very nicely. But then for those who are in a pancharatric line, then they would have, you know, whatever mantras go along with that. You know, so we see Brahma, you know, he got the mission, but he also had the Gopal mantra, and then he got the Kama Gayatri. So then those same pancharatric mantras were there. So it's not that they're a new thing. You know, it was you know, from the first initiated Brahman, they were introduced. So the ability to acknowledge and accept and work with, but at the same time not to think that it doesn't matter. So one has to. It's like etiquette. You know how to behave. You know, let us say for example, you're with a senior person, but it's an informal environment. So things are very relaxed and that. But that doesn't mean that you stop respecting them.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be formal. The respect may not be formally expressed. But you still know where the line is. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like you're on the train and there's, how do you say, one berth like that. You don't rock, paper, scissors who gets the bed. You know what I'm saying? He's a senior one. He gets it. You know, like that. You know, you have to go out on the platform and get some pakoras. You go out and get it. You know, you know these things. You know, you keep your eye on the luggage. You know. You know, so therefore, before you go out on the platform, you have to see that it's safe. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that that etiquette is there. So if that's not appreciated, then these things get very difficult. They get speculative, and people, you know, misapply, and, you know, either it's, how you say, too much or too little.
But it's interesting, I mean, we keep talking about it, but there's so much emphasis on diksha, talking in ISKCON.
Mm-hmm.
So people are very eager to get diksha, but then most of the time they hear from everyone else, including you.
He is the siksha guru. Means he's the siksha guru. Everybody else is representing him.
Right.
See, is that when you're dealing with the founder Acharya, before the founder Acharya comes along, then, you know, means before he appears, then you're talking guru to disciple, and each time it'll go and it may have had some adjustment in application and everything like that. And so, accordingly, then it may be, you know, seen. But once the founder Acharya comes, then how he's presenting, that is the method to see, you know, how you deal with all the instructions of the line. And it will be the method for understanding, presenting the philosophy until the end of their mission.
Yes.
Like that. So Prabhupada meant in 10,000 years. So it will be, he is the Siksha Guru. Everybody else is representing him in Siksha. In the Diksha line, then it just goes down, Guru to disciple, like that. But the point is the Siksha being the central thing, he's going to be the main one. So just like in the Sri Sampradaya, Ramanuja. So today they just talk what Ramanuja said. They don't talk. You know, it means they've heard it from their Guru, and there may be major persons in the line, like Badi Raj and some others who bring out some depth to really appreciate what Ramanujacharya was saying, but otherwise, then it's what Ramanujacharya says. So the Siksha becomes, you know, it is the main thing. You have to have Diksha to connect yourself like that. But the point is without instruction, how do you move forward? So that's what I'm saying, those who take dikshas, you know, seriously, and the siksha that they're getting from that diksha guru, they'll advance nicely. Those who, you know, want to get initiated but don't take the instruction of their spiritual master very seriously, and because they don't see siksha as important, don't take from anyone else, it'll be very slow for them. Like that. But if for those who take diksha from their spiritual master and then take siksha from others, without disregarding their spiritual master, like that, and seeing that it's that nicely and see it in the context of what Srila Prabhupada's saying, then they'll be able to expand that. If they think, I don't need to listen, and I listen to others, or I listen to whoever I like, that'll be, again, weak. So either those who don't think it's important don't listen, or who don't think it doesn't matter, and I'm the judge, then these things become difficult. Like that. So, but it still has to be always taken back to Srila Prabhupada. So even if you say, well, what about hearing from this one and that, if it doesn't jive with what Prabhupada says, then why would you bother?
So really the qualification of a Diksha Guru in ISKCON is how much and how well he or she represents Srila Prabhupada. In his teaching, in his guidelines, in his instructions, in his mission, in every aspect.
That makes good voice.
Thank you.
They didn't see.
Is this recorded?
Yes. This way it is, not that way.
The audience there.
The audio gets it. They can't hear the shaking of the hand. So that's the whole point. Is that's the meaning of the founder Acharya, but that doesn't mean that it's. That they take Prabhupada as the preeminent Diksha Guru, which is much of the time how when we've taken, but make Prabhupada, is the center and all that, when that was all discussed before.
Yes.
It was all Prabhupada as the Diksha Guru. It wasn't Prabhupada as the Siksha Guru. Otherwise, then why, you know, so then it becomes like Bhaktivinoda Thakur was mentioning, that I'm following rules and regulations that I'm not necessarily qualified for, and making very strong that, you know, this has to be done this way, but at the same time, other rules and regulations I'm not worried about, and that doesn't matter, or they're not important, or, you know, time, place, circumstance, you know, all these different kinds of things, without saying, okay, I'm not qualified to do that, and so therefore I'll do the best I can, but as I get purified by chanting and association, I will come to the point where I can do it nicely. You know what I'm saying? So there's not an understanding of the natural kind of like honest understanding of oneself at the same time as one is not, would be the lacking confidence that, you know, can't do, and I'm so this and that. Point is the process is good, the process works, you stick to it, it will work. That's why Jagai and Madai are there. If they can do it, we can do it. You know, we may be bad, but, you know, we're not as bad as they were. You know, even on, you know, nobody we know was as bad as them. And not only that, to add on top of that, they came from a high-grade Brahmin family. You know, same like Ajami, a high-grade Brahmin family, devotee, everything like this. Then he falls down and then he becomes bad. You know? So we're not on that level. So therefore, it applies to us. We can do it. You know, this idea, oh, we can't, or Westerners, we can't. This is all just excuses for, you know, I don't want to surrender. That's all. Point is if you can't do it, then be humble. I'm so fallen, I can't do it. So unfortunate. But I respect those who do, and I will try my best. And then as I get purified of my upadis, where I demand that, you know, I'm a Westerner, therefore I get carte blanche, I can do whatever I want, right? Then you'll advance, you'll get somewhere, you'll actually become very developed. But as long as we maintain these upadis and all that, we won't do. So it's just part of it, my Diksha Guru and like that. So it's important, it's part of the etiquette, but it becomes overemphasized. But I would say with neophyte devotees, better they overemphasize it than under. Because if they're overemphasizing their Diksha Guru, they're not emphasizing necessarily Siksha Gurus. But if you try to, you know, too much put an emphasis on that, they'll de-emphasize the Diksha Gurus, and then they really won't care for Siksha Gurus. Yeah. So the whole point is the Acharyas and the Shastra always says they're equal. But if you have one Diksha Guru, you have many Siksha Gurus. But there's a balance there, so it all has to come back, so it has to be in line with what Prabhupada said. So it's not, you can't say, well, you know, this guy from Ramakrishnamati is my Siksha Guru, and I learned so many nice things from him. How are you seeing that in line with what Prabhupada's saying?
And that's mild. Now there's more of the listening to all the New Age people, Eckhart Tolle, Sadhguru, and this. I mean, there are many devotees who actually listen to them, quote them, and think they're really cool.
I mean, if you look at it, anybody can ride around in a Harley. It's not that bad, right? You know. Now, yeah, it's a Harley. It's not on a, like a, you know, 50cc Honda or something.
It's a Bajaj turned into a Harley, right?
No, I'm talking about what he was riding in America.
Oh, yeah.
That was a Harley. Over here, it'll be an Enfield or something. Yeah, or a Bajaj or something.
Hmm?
TBS, yeah. If he's on the draw side, he'll be a TBS. You know, you got to take care of your sponsors. You know,
Maharaj, is it possible that you have a guru in ISKCON who completely represents Prabhupada's teachings, who completely embodies Prabhupada's mission, inspires his disciples so much so that the disciples are caught into the personality cult of the person?
It's always possible. The point is it's amount of the personalities themselves.
Right.
But at least if that's happening, at least it's in line with someone who is proper, and as they get purified, it'll become more balanced. So always this thing that, oh, it's a personality cult, as if it's a bad thing, it's kind of like, and you're not hoping that your comment won't become a personality cult? You know, they're not looking at how many views they got. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The guys that are on there every 30 seconds on Instagram and Twitter and that, these are the guys that have nobody following? Or the guys that have, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands, millions of followers? You know? So they're all expecting they'll follow them. Whoever says it's a personality cult, unless all the senior Vaishnavas say that the guru's trying to do that. If the guru's not doing that and people follow like that, that's just because that's, you know, that's the way how it works. on the material platform. This is people see like that and don't necessarily see, but as long as they take the instructions and follow it and use it, then they're going to get the benefit. But if the guru is trying to make a personality cult, cultivates it that way, you know, like the Indian gurus, they know how to do that. They're so expert. I mean, you're talking about 151 trillion years of you know, past experience that, you know, that you can draw from. So no one's better than the Indian, bogus Indian gurus for creating personality cults. I mean, if you look at our friend from, I think, Andhra with the afro, you know, 50 million followers.
Yeah.
Yeah. No? That's what...
I don't know how many followers...
Yeah, no, that's what the media was saying. I mean, Western media was saying, you know, so generally they try to play it down. Because this was favorable, so... So... You know, how much of those are serious, but at the same time as how serious is his instructions, you know, so. So the thing is that's not a problem. So when it's made into a problem, it's like, well, then what do you expect neophytes to do? They're not going to follow with, be happy that they're following authority. Otherwise, as karmis, would they be following authority? You know, so that comes down to is that it comes down to the more intellectual, the more pessimistic. They don't like these things. But the thing is we're people. We have relationships. What's the problem? As long as what they're getting is useful, you apply it. You'll become purified. Then you'll see as those things balance out. But if they go and then they throw this out, I mean, how you say, you know, that was the whole thrust of 86. Was just exactly targeting this, you know. Then there's no authority, basically, in general in ISKCON. Individuals might, but that's because they themselves are more religious. But otherwise, you know, otherwise, why would the GBC have to take on a second nomenclature to try to establish their authority? You know, there's only one more whip left. Is that WLT. That's the as high as you can go. I don't know what WLT.
No.
Means ear means it W, you know, period L period T, you know, the capital.
Oh, I see, I see.
You know, it's like you have GBC,
yes.
You have UMA, and then the last one is ULT. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the point is that it comes by we are people, we have faith, we are people, we follow people. And if individuals don't like that we follow people, then where is that coming from? Is it stemming from their personal view? You know, person means their personalistic view? Or their impersonal view? Is it coming from the optimistic idea of Sri Krishna or the pessimistic of the material world? Is it coming from a general, what's good for the people, or is it coming from their own personal, I don't like it? So, I mean, these things are all given in the scriptures. You know? So it's a negative. It comes from a negative side. And that negative side neither does any good for that individual espousing it, nor for anybody who is, you know, influenced by them. Yeah. So, makes sense?
Yes.
You know, because Krishna's in the heart. He guides you. You don't have faith in authority because this one did this and that one did that. It's kind of like you wanted that. That's why you got it. You know, it's like you wanted to see glasses half empty, therefore you were put in situations you could see glasses half empty. There are other people in the exact same situation, they wanted to see glass half full, they're seeing it that way. So at some point people have to take responsibility for their own view. You can blame others as much as you like, but self-realization means you have to try. So you follow. Then if you don't like, where is that dynamic association? There's a good chance that individuals who have that mentality are not finding it. Why not? because they don't want to find it, because then you have to surrender. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a very straightforward, simple thing. So the point is that balance, that Siksha and Diksha Guru are both important, and you see like that because you're trying to get instructions. So wherever you're able to get those instructions, that's discussed. But it's also known, it's not like it's hidden. You're hearing from this person or that person, the Guru knows. Like that. And so it means the Diksha Guru. And so then, because they're the one responsible that you're getting good Siksha. Like that. And so then you're hearing from, that's the way it's, that's why it's a society. So you have that. I mean, it's just like you have the six Goswamis, you know, living there in Vrindavan, Radhika, and giving these discussions, or as you go down the generations, then as you hear, then whoever's, you're hearing, somebody's leading as a lead devotee, and everybody there in Vrindavan is getting a benefit from their association. But it doesn't mean that they're their Diksha Guru. Like that. Does that make sense? But they're all in the same line. The same Siksha line. So, yeah. So that's the thing, is that you have the mechanics at work, and you also have the etiquette. And so then you have to find that balance. Unfortunately, either one or the other gets... But it'll just take time. Time before these cultural things get established. You know, cultures take generations. You know, I mean, we're not reading about the Roman civilization year. It means, how much do you know from 700 BC until Caesar?
He was there.
There was this wolf, and there were these two kids, and then after they grew up, then they started Rome. And, you know, there was some fighting and all that, and they kind of pulled together a little bit, you know, the little cities there, and then there's Caesar. And then they killed Caesar, and then Augustus went around and killed everybody who killed him, and he did all right. And then after that, then you don't hear a whole lot, and then there's that one guy, some like that. And he, at the end, because the Romans weren't really so much into the gay thing, but the Greeks were, and so then when he finished, you know, and when he was finished with his office and went off, then he went with a whole band of guys and went to Greece. And then you have Nero and his fiddle, and yeah, that's kind of it. You know, so in that what is it, you know, 700 and 400. So 1,100 years, you only hear within a very small amount of time. You know? So the same way is that it takes time for a culture to develop. It takes generations. And if you're not careful, you can lose it. Like in the Greeks, they had the golden age, and then they had a dark age. 200 years. Everything was lost in the way of culture and language and poetry and that, nothing. And then again it starts to come up. So, like that, it's just one has to be careful. So the idea is that you follow the acharyas. Following the acharyas, then you see how it is the nice etiquette that's going on, what is the nice culture, what are the nice things, what are the instructions, how are they living their life. You try to do that the best you can, you go back to Godhead, and there you don't have to worry. There's not going to be any loss of anything there. It's ever expanding, ever wonderful, and ever nice. And then here it'll be time, but you know, it's just like fault finding is not glorified in any scripture or any moral text as a good quality. Can you? Never. But if we base the whole movement on simply finding fault in everybody, then how are we going to get anywhere? The individuals finding the fault won't get any benefit. Others who listen to them won't get any benefit. You know, it's one thing is if there's pessimism, atheism, polytheism, you know, all these kind of things, impersonalism, you know, voyeurism, these things are there in the philosophy. Yes, you have to take care of those. But if it's just basing it on political, so-called political mores, then it's not going to get anywhere. Because we have to remember, when you're dealing with mores, then Grendel and his mother lived in the mores. They were a problem.
I studied that.
Yes. So you know how much problem it was. You know, and we see also that story of Ramachandra Puri, you know. When he, you know, after everybody followed the etiquette and everyone was respectful, Lord Chaitanya, everybody, but as soon as he left Puri to go on to, you know, wherever he was traveling to, they had a kirtan and a party.
Party time.
Yeah, it was party time. You know, start cooking some halva, and, you know, cook all the stuff that, you know, you can't eat this, can't eat that. You know, they had a party. You know, so it's not you can't base on that. It means something that's against the principles of advancement and devotional service, that becomes important so that people can properly advance. But all these secondary aspects, if you make them prominent, without them saying that the primary can't function, that won't work. You know, there's so many examples. No, it's the primary that makes the secondary work the other way around. We may get affected by those secondary. That's why all the secondary is nicely engaged in the primary. And we're given ways to do it because we wouldn't know how to do it. So therefore, then we follow that very nicely. But it's not about the secondary. It's about the primary. Is that good? Yes. Okay. You don't want to try this one?
Not yet.
Not yet, okay.
Not enough biting.
Okay. Okay. So the main point is here is that Yadranandan Acharya, then he's following in the line of Advaita Acharya, you know, of those who are pure Vaishnavas. And in that, he's looking at who knows Krishna, then they become, you know, say Guru Hoy, right? So then Vasudeva Datta then is who his guide is. You know, because Vasudeva Datta is, that's the Vasudeva Datta over here, no?
There's two of them.
There's two Vasudeva Dattas.
There's the Vasudeva Datta that Lord Chaitanya met after he went to Koma Brahmana. And then there's the Vasudeva Datta who begged to take this in front of the action of
all the So, which Vasudeva Datta is this? This is this one. The one across over here.
I think it's
Lama. Yeah. Because he's one of three most merciful in the universe.
Yes.
Probably because of this, because it said that because of the connection to him, that's why he was accepted also.
Because so Yadrananda was accepted from that, yeah. Yeah. So that's just the Vaishnav etiquette. I mean, the Vaishnav etiquette and the culture is so nice and pleasant, but the only difficulty with it is you need to have faith in the process, applying yourself to the process where you and surrender that process where you don't mind working in an environment that doesn't have prestige and honor and all these kind of things. You know, at the same time as devotees are giving that to everyone, you know, but there's not that's not what's being looked for, so it doesn't have the formal aspect as strong. I just saw the other day, somebody sent me a short clip of one Mataji and her, they somehow or another did a surprise birthday for this Mataji. And, you know, so all kinds of friends and everything came. She didn't know, she was just coming back from work, and then everybody was there. And then during it, they would go around the room and then talk about, you know, what benefit that they have gotten from, you know, this Mataji being, you know, their mentor. and all this and that. And you hear the stuff, and if you didn't know who they were talking about, you would definitely think it's, you know, disciples talking about one of our big, big gurus. It means it's that kind of discussion. Like that.
And they were praising her.
And they were just praising her. Well, she's probably someone, you know, no one's ever really even heard of. Like that, because, you know, she'd spend the time, put in the effort, put all things like this. So that's the whole point of the siksha. That's what it does. So if that's appreciated, then the Vaishnava culture is so wonderful. So we at one time, we have to be careful. At one time, we want all that, but at the same time, is all the things that make that we don't want. Some of the ones who start the strongest on community and no temples, they're also anti-guru, anti-Vyas Puja, no Vyas Puja books, no formal things, no none of this. We don't need any of this. We just need Prabhupada, you know, like that. And so then it's a problem. You know, same time, you know, we want community, but we don't want Varnashram. You know, all these things, kind of like, I want food, but you can't use any of these grains, vegetables, and everything like that. And, you know, I need nourishment, but you can't, you know, cook anything. I need that, you know, it's just, you know, it's like, yeah. So, here is pointing out is that these seeming contradictions, then are not the problem. 36, 163 to 169. When Yadunandan Acharya entered the house of Raghunath Das and stood in the courtyard, Raghunath Das went there and fell down to offer his obeisances. Yet one of Yadunandan Acharya's disciples had been worshipping the deity, but had left that service. Yadunandan Acharya wanted Raghunath Das to induce the disciple to take up that service again. Yadunanda Acharya requested Raghunath Das, please induce the Brahmin to resume the service, for there is no other Brahmin to do it. After saying this, Yadunanda Acharya took Raghunath Das with him and went out. By that time, all the watchmen were deeply asleep because it was the end of the night. East of the house of Raghunath Das was the house of Yadunanda Acharya. Yadunanda Acharya and Raghunath Das walked together as they went towards the house. Halfway along the path, Raghunath Das submitted at the lotus feet of his spiritual master. I shall go to the home of that Brahmin, induce him to return, and send him to your home. You may go home without anxiety. Following your order, I shall persuade the Brahmin. On this plea, after asking permission, Raghunath Das decided to go away.
That's it.
Yeah, that was it. Okay. 36, 170 to 185. Raghunath Das thought, this is the greatest opportunity to go away because this time there are no servants or watchmen with me. Thinking in this way, he quickly proceeded towards the east. Sometimes he turned around and looked back, but no one was following him. Thinking of the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda Prabhu, he left the general path and proceeded with great haste on the one not generally used. Giving up the general path from village to village, he passed through the jungles, thinking with heart and soul about the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He walked about 30 miles in one day. That's 45 kilometers. That's pretty good.
That's fast walking.
Yeah. But it also means probably you started early morning and went into the night, you know, or you can't go too much if you're in the jungle. But as soon as this, that's fast walking. And in the evening he took rest in the cowshed of a milkman. When the milkman saw that Raghunath Das was fasting, he gave him some milk. Raghunath Das drank the milk and lay down to rest there for the night. At the house of Raghunath Das, the servant and watchman, not seeing him there, immediately went to inquire about him from his spiritual master, Yadunandan Acharya. Yadunandan Acharya said, he has already asked my permission and returned home. Thus there arose a tumultuous sound as everyone cried, now Raghunath has gone away. Raghunath Das's father said, now all the devotees from Bengal have gone to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Raghunath Das has fled with them. 10 men should immediately go catch him and bring him back. Raghunath Das's father wrote a letter to Sivananda Sen asking him with great humility, please return my son.
I mean, I can't imagine, because in those days you found in this facility, you know. Probably had these guys running everywhere, handing over the letters.
He's not here.
okay, running back is not there.
Yeah.
Things have not changed much since then. A lot of brahmacharis.
They do the same thing. And then the father sends a letter or something. Yeah.
Really?
Yes. It is to him.
In Jankara, the ten men caught up with a group of Vaishnavas going to Neelachal. After delivering the letter, the men inquired from Shivananda Sen about Raghunath Das. When Shivananda Sen replied, he did not come here. The 10 men returned home, and Raghunath Das's father and mother were filled with anxiety. Raghunath Das, who had been resting at the milkman's house, got up early in the morning. Instead of going to the east, he turned his face south and proceeded. He crossed Chaturboga, but instead of going on the general path, he proceeded on the path that went from village to village. Srila Prabhupada. Chaturboga, known as Charakadi, is in the district of 24 Parganas in West Bengal. It is situated near the celebrated village Jayanagara Majilapur, formerly the Ganges, or some of its branches flow through this region. Sometimes Chaturboga is misunderstood to have been a village on the river Kanchai Nadi in Benapole. In Benapole, that's more. Okay. Oh, so he went east.
To Bangladesh.
Yeah, so he's going the opposite direction. I didn't catch that.
He said it's misunderstood to be a village.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But my point is that from his house, instead of going west or south, he went east, because they're not going to look there. And then when he got to a certain point, then he stopped, then he went south. And then when you get down, then you can come across, you know, at the bottom, because they're going to be looking for going on the main roads and what would be the way to go, you know.
Probably more from Calcutta, but it was a village.
Yeah, but still, you have your main roads that people go on, or the secondary roads, but he's going not to that. Even just out of his house. Now he's traveling on the village roads. But when he left the house, he didn't even use them. He just went through the jungle. Jungle just means, you know, through fields and, you know, parts that aren't so developed. And, it's not Brazilian machete, you know, that kind of, you know, like that kind. Not caring about 186 to 193. Not caring about eating, he traveled all day. Hunger was not an impediment, for his mind was concentrated upon obtaining shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes he chewed fried grains, sometimes he cooked, and sometimes he drank milk. In this way, he kept his life and soul together with whatever was available wherever he went. He reached Jagannath Puri in 12 days, but could eat only for 3 days on the way. When Raghunath Das met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord was sitting with his companions, headed by Swoop Damodar. So this means that, because Lord Chaitanya said he was going from there to Vrindavan and then coming back. So he said after a year, so this sleeping in the courtyard was for a year, but I mean, how many times he came in, he fluffed the pillow this way, now he fluffed it that way. You know, so you don't have to, you know, you don't need. No, but it sounds like just the next day after he went back from Nityananda Prabhu. But, you know. Staying at a distance, place in the courtyard, he fell down to offer obeisances. Then Mukunda Dutta said, "Here is Raghunath." As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard these words, he immediately welcomed Raghunath Das. "Come here," he said. Raghunath Das then clasped the lotus feet of the Lord. But the Lord stood up and embraced him out of his causeless mercy. Raghunath Das offered prayers at the lotus feet of all the devotees, headed by Swoop Damodar Goswami. Seeing the special mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had bestowed upon Raghunath Das, they embraced him also. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "The mercy of Lord Krishna is stronger than anything else. Therefore,
The Lord has delivered you from the ditch of materialistic life, which is like a hole into which people pass stool.
And we get grumpy about what the Bhagavatam says. Srila Prabhupada, according to the law of karma, everyone is destined to suffer and joy according to a certain material standard. But the mercy of Lord Krishna is so powerful that the Lord can change all the reactions of one's past karma or fruit of activities. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically drew attention to the mercy of Lord Krishna. That mercy is more powerful than anything else, for it had saved Raghunath Das from the strong bondage of materialistic life, which the Lord compared to a hole where people pass stool. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his verdict that those addicted to the materialistic way of life are like worms that are living in stool but cannot give it up. Right? Because you have to remember is how much money Raghunath Das had and the position, and you know, I mean, it's just the authority, the influence, the wonderfulness of the relationships that were there, everything is that you would see as who would give that up. But Raghunath Das gave it up. You know, so that's why he's saying it's Krishna's mercy. Because when you don't have attachment for the material, that's by Krishna's mercy. Like that, that's the... A Grihavrata, one who has decided to live in a comfortable home, although it is actually miserable, is in a condemned position. Only the mercy of Krishna can save one from such misery. Without Krishna's mercy, one cannot get out of the filthy entanglement of materialistic life. The poor living entity cannot give up his materialistic position on his own. Only when granted the special mercy of Krishna can he give it up. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew very well that Raghunath Das was already liberated. Nevertheless, he emphasized that Raghunath Das's life of material comfort as a very rich man's son, with a very beautiful wife and many servants to attend him, was like a ditch of stool. The Lord thus specifically indicated that ordinary men who are very happy with material comforts and family life are in no better position than worms and stool. Because it won't make the living entity happy. That's why then we see, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur then discusses about how to connect those things to Krishna. And that by doing so, then one is on the transcendental platform. Then one's no longer. We see it's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the point that I am the servant of Krishna. So it's actually the house is Krishna. So I run the house in such a way. You know, it's just like, let's say, it's very standard in these very wealthy houses and things like that, that there's someone who's head of house who manages the whole place. He takes care of everything, all the servants, all everything like that. And in this way, he sees that it all goes very nicely for whoever's the master of the house. You know, and so he has that authority, he has all those things like that. He sees the accounts, he sees to who's doing what, the timings, the schedules, the, you know, whatever's going on. And in that way, then, everything runs nicely. So the same way as the Grihastha then would see himself in that same kind of context, that it's Krishna's house, but, you know, I'm running it for Krishna. And then, so you try to do your best on how to do that. And then that takes you out of here. So this means that he's talking about the Grihavrata, who they're determined they want to stay and enjoy, but they don't. You know, it's just like the worms in stool. In their mind, they're happy. They're, what's it, happy as Larry, I think that's the, what is he saying? You know, but the thing is they don't catch that they're, you know, it's not an ideal situation.
The difference in the worms and stool, they don't get depressed.
Yeah. Because they think that, so who's determined like that? That it's miserable, they don't see. As I said, the fools and the Paramahamsas, they're happy.
But determination is based on the fact that you don't know any better, so the determination is, I better hang on to this, I've got nothing else.
That's why then these other things are shown. That means it is a determination, but it would be more the position of security.
Yeah, security.
Yeah, but that's why then you have that, you engage that connected to Krishna. As you become purified, then you'll start to see is that Krishna is independent of these things. Right? Then the inchworm can put the foot here. Right? But then once putting there, then one picks up the back one. You know? So That's why it's step by step. You know, we have Shraddha, Sarva Sangha, Bhajana Kriya. It's step by step. And so then you see, as we're at this point, conscious here, we're engaging these things, but then you start to see is that it's all connected to Krishna and it's all very nice. You know, and it moves forward. You know, it can be done in a moment, but generally we tend to take a little more than a moment.
I think the most difficult for Grihamilis is the idea that even though I suffer where I am, at least it's about me. To shift to Grihastha means it's no longer about me. I'm not interested.
But the point is how well is it working out for them? Because the point is if it's about yourself, that means everybody else in the household will develop that quality. And as long as you're useful to them, means as long as you're useful to them, and to do that benefit, you're in that kind of senior position, that'll work. But as soon as your value that new height, what's that word? I always use it in Australia. Value for money, like that, is that when the value for money is going out of balance, then their respect, everything else will just pull back. That's what they don't catch now. Now when things are going nice, they make that. What about later? Now you're stuck, and you said it's about you and it's comfortable and that. Now it's not comfortable, but now what are you going to do? So unless you're so attached, you're so conditioned, so unless you are... you know, more determined, you know, coming from good association, then they can leave that environment.
You know, Maharaj, I find that pastime, every time I read that pastime, I get stuck with that point that, you know, later on, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to talk to Raghunath about his father and his family. He's not going to have nice things to say about them. Like, I think he's going to say, they're not even Vaishnavas.
He's going to say they're Vaishnav Praya.
Yeah, the Vaishnav.
But Vaishnava Praya technically means neophytes.
So,
technically.
Yeah.
Raghunath, he's in a good family.
Yes.
Let's say, compared to many others. And still, it's considered, you know, all the way up at school. And what is to be understood in that pastime is it was to be the destiny of Raghunath Das that he had to renounce. And we should not take that pastime that it should be everyone's example to follow. Am I right or not?
Well, I mean, if your parents are making, you know, billions like he is, and they've, you know, all these different things, and you have a nice, you know, Durga Mandap in your place, and like this, then you can start to, you know, draw the parallels and all that. But if not, the point is what is giving up materialistic life? Is it a physical thing or is consciousness? Because you see with him, he's always a consciousness. He was trying to attain the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. So it's all right if you move out of the house, but in 10 days he ate 3 days. So is this person moving out of the house because, oh, he gave it up and all that? Is he cool with eating 3 days out of 10? Since it's all about renunciation. Or is it now it's, you know, in the house I have to put so much attention into everybody else. You know, where's my time? But now I give them up. Now it's all about me. I can do what I want and eat what I want, when I want, you know, how I want. You know what I'm saying? And then 10 years later you see them on a rickshaw with a younger Russian girl. In Vrindavan, I'm talking Vrindavan. Here we don't have rickshaws riding around like that, so it doesn't. No? You haven't seen?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that means that it wasn't about actual renunciation, because they just gave up the situation, but they didn't give up the attachment.
Yes.
So the point is, Raghunath Das has given up the attachment. That's why he said he's already a pure devotee, he's all this and that. Yes. Pure devotee means he doesn't have the attachment.
Yes.
And so. Then in here, for him and his nature, he wanted to function in this capacity. But you see others, then they are, you know, Vasudev Dutta, you know, he's living with his family. You know, so many of the other, what's his name?
Most of them.
Yeah, somewhere living like that, but it's like that. So it's not a problem. It's whichever it is. The main point is get to that point where you're a pure devotee, where you have no material need. And then whether it works more smoothly to be in family life or not in family life, whichever works. You know, it's just like, you know what I'm saying? You're trying to do something. You want to go buy something. Which store do you go to? You know, there's so many stores. You know, depending upon what you need or what's available or what's you know, is that, you know, it's practical. It means the condition. It means what nature you have, and that it works very nicely in this environment. You know, the Pandavas, they're pure devotees. They live their life as grihasthas.
They were able to live in the palace and live in the forest.
Yeah. So that's the thing. For Brahmins and Kshatriyas, that works very easy. Like that. But the point, yeah, that's the point, is that they can do both, and whichever is necessary, that's what they do. So then if things are simple, they live simple. If things are elaborate, they know how to engage it. So it's not about not having anything. That's generally how we take it. And it's all right in the beginning, you see it that way. Because you'll, as long as you're looking at it about your facilities, right? In other words, let's say someone's very new and they start to appreciate about the point of renunciation and keeping only what you necessary, and then they start going through what they have in their possession. And by doing that, let's say they remove, you know, some portion of it because it's not necessary or this or that, that's fine. That'll help. There's less things, there's less to do, there's less distractions, and it may be very nice. But it's helpful to their devotional service. But at some point, they have to be focused more on hearing and chanting and all those things. And if they do, then you'll see it'll go very nicely. But if they've done all that, and that's all they have, they either have to keep getting more and more smaller until they're living in a shoebox, you know, and they have to, you know, on a regular basis listen to Monty Python and their discussion about, you know, that renunciation, then they're going to run into a dead end. And now what gets worse is that they think, I'm renounced, I'm doing this, and then they start to look at others and judge others and think, oh, why does he have this and that? We're not, you know, on that, we're not communists. You know, for us, it means the equality is everyone according to their, what it says, I think, isn't everyone according to their ability, everyone according to their need? But it means it's very individual. But it's interpreted, everybody gets exactly the same thing. But that doesn't make sense according to what it says. You know, so the point is, somebody needs more, they have more. Someone needs less, they have less. Right? So that's the thing, is one's honest about that. And so just see, if I need more, I use more. But it's still for Krishna. And if I need less, I use less. Why would you want to bother yourself with more? So it always gets that aspect that it's, that the point is, you know, why would you stay in that? Because there, you know, you saw when he's in there and he gets, you hear about what their situation is. And you know that they're very wealthy. Then, you know, he's told that, you know, don't be a, what is it? A crazy fellow. Crazy. Yeah. And so then he goes back and tries to look as normal as possible. Oh, that was a bit before Lord Chaitanya went. Then it's much later that he met Lord Nityananda.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so then it may be very soon after he met Lord Nityananda that he left.
Yeah, yeah. He meets Lord Chaitanya, gets this instruction, just remain calm, don't be a crazy fellow. Then he meets Nitai after a while.
Yes.
And then within some time, then he runs away.
Yeah, because Lord Chaitanya said he was going up to Vrindavan. Yes. And then when he came back to Puri, that would be the time for him to come. Because otherwise, if he goes and he's in Vrindavan, he'll be running around. And if he missed, it's like a Rupa Sanatan. One goes on this, while I that. Yes. You know, like, you know, so, yeah. But you notice when it got into, what do you call it? Him being not a crazy fellow and taking part in the family affairs, how insane it was.
For him?
But just in general. I mean, it's like you're dealing with that and then you have all these other guys and there's all the politics that goes on and have to talk to everybody and everybody's wanting the money and, You know, it's insane. So, you know, what do you need that for?
But it seems like Lord Chaitanya did the same with each, I mean, not every one of the Goswamis, but there is a story how after he, not sure if it's after he met Rupa and Sanatan Ram Kelly or before, they used to write to him and he would never reply, just for them to, for that eagerness to grow and grow. And then he told them this, the analogy of the paramour.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he also teased him.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's whatever is like it mentioned. According to the law of karma, everyone is destined to suffer and joy according to a certain material standard. But by the mercy of Lord Krishna, is so powerful that the Lord can change all the reactions of one's karma or fruit of activities. Because once one steps onto the devotional path, then as devotional service, if one is purely situated, you're looking for what's the best for serving Krishna. You're not looking for something else. What is the best facilities, best arrangements, everything to serve Krishna? That's what you're looking at. So in the same way as on that path to get to that point, it's also the same consideration. So whatever will be better for you to come to Krishna. And so then if having more facilities will be better, you'll get more. And if having less is better, you'll get less. So, you know, so because you have to see is that it's about that surrender to Krishna. It's not about us. It's not about, you know, I'm such a fabulous guy. And, you know, so, you know, sometimes they hear discussions about, you know, so that the material situation they were in, and that's why they were able to come to Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. No, it's not. It's about your desire. And then those things may become an ornament to it. But if you don't have the desire, it's not the dozo man. Because there's millions of people that have the same kind of facility and they're not becoming devotees. So one has to come to that point of faith that there's nothing else other than devotion. Therefore, we're looking for what's best and Krishna's looking for what's best. And that, and whether it's in line with your karma or not, it doesn't matter. But for the karmis, you did something. You're supposed to get, you know, 10 days of this, you won't get one nanosecond less than 10 days of that, if it was good or bad or whatever it was. But with devotional service, then maybe you only need one day. And so that's all it is. Or even just a hint that that day is going to happen. You know, and then it'll make it work. You know, it's just like I used to say, you had that Alwar. No, what is it? Who is that? I was moving to a different one. Let's say let's take the example of Pingala. So you get the idea that she's doing well because she has her own place with its own gardens. Right? And then this one evening, then Dattatreya, I think, comes and asks if he can stay in the garden for the night. And she, you know, gives facilities. And with that blessing, then that night, there are no suitors. And at the same time, it's because of that blessing, she can realize that that's not a problem. And so therefore, she goes to sleep absorbed in the Lord and completely on the liberated platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it may be without, she may have had nice facilities, but then you got liberated now, which is, you know, does that make sense? You know, so she's absorbed in the Lord, so it's real liberation. And so that's beyond anything of value here. You know, being Lord Brahma doesn't even compare to that, you know, so it's like, So it's just we have to understand is that it's going to go that way. If things aren't going good, then there's something to learn from that. If things are going good, there's something to learn from that. Because otherwise, then if it's going good, we think, yeah, this is standard. No one is going bad. Oh, how could Krishna let this happen? I'm a devotee. And it's just these things happen. It goes up. The material world means it's waves. Comes and then goes back. Comes and goes back. occasional tsunami. You know, so the it's just a matter of whatever situation you're in. That's why we saw that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the point, well, I have no material desire. So he's unaffected by the material situation and unaffected by his health. And so from that, there's no considerations of that. He just does what's best that he can do for service to Krishna. And then he moves very, very nicely. And then we see from that one, then he's getting his position, serving under the senior Vaishnavas, getting his facilities, getting his service. You know, it all moves forward nicely. His point is, Krishna wants to give. Because that's why I said we take one step, Krishna will take 10. So he's already, you know, you have to agree he's doing, you know, something. It's not like you take a step, he takes a step. Well, my step was bigger, you know. No, he takes 10. So, you know, he wants it to happen. We're the one that, you know, drags our feet or does the moonwalk or, you know.
And he's Trivikrama.
Yes, so he can take very big steps. Raghunath Das answered within his mind, I do not know who Krishna is. I simply know that your mercy, O my Lord, has saved me from my family life. The Lord continued, your father and his elder brother are both related as brothers to my grandfather, Nilambar Chakrabarti. Therefore, I consider them my grandfathers. Srila Prabhupada. Nilambar Chakrabarti, the grandfather of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was very intimately related to Raghunath Das's father and uncle. Nilambar Chakrabarti used to call them his younger brothers because both of them were very much devoted to the Brahmins and were very respectable gentlemen. Similarly, they used to call him Dada Chakrabarti, addressing him as an elder brother Brahmin. Raghunath Das, however, was almost the same age as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Generally, a grandchild may joke about his grandfather. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took advantage of the relationship between his grandfather and Raghunath Das's father and uncle to speak in a joking way. 36-196-197. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, since your father and his elder brother are younger brothers of Nilambar Chakrabarti, I may joke about them in this way. My dear Raghunath Das, your father and his elder brother are just like worms in stool in the ditch of material enjoyment. For the great disease of the poison of material enjoyment is what they consider happiness. So that was smooth, wasn't it? Yeah. It's just
imagine saying that to someone the first day of the Sunday feast.
But if you could say it as smoothly as Lord Chaitanya, they'll go, wow. I mean, I've seen devotees say like that, and because the purity is so great, the others just listen and go, right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that one, I think it was in... There was a court case in New York, and
I think
Adi Keshav, yeah, he was. Then he was dealing with it, and I think at one point he says, says, what's your evidence? And they said, you know, Prabhupada says my books. So just sit there and read through his books. You know, in other words, by the time they read through the whole books, then, you know, they'll all be liberated. You know, it's like that boot in the tree. They read the whole. I think what was it? I can't remember what they read. Ramayana or Mahabharata? I think Bhagavatam. He says that, and so in 30 days he read. At the end of the 30 days, then the tree crashed and the personality left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he heard the whole Bhagavatam, so he got liberated. So then, and then in their province, sometimes gives comments what to say, and they were just like this, you know. And then the judge would go, you know, he'd nod his head and say, yeah, you're right. You know, so that's the thing. They're just very soberly, very honest, very open, not naive, you know, because that also Prabhupada mentions naive. Is it naivete? Is a spiritual, what do you call it? not weakness.
Blindness.
But he's meaning he's saying it's a fault. Because someone say, "Oh, I don't know." He says, "It's a fault. Well, why don't you know?" You know, you should be trying your best to find out. And Krishna will give something like this. So it's very good. So if you can do like this, because so many of the early devotees, I mean, they could speak, you know, so pleasantly like this, and really nice voice. You know, someone like what's his name, Vrindakund.
Dinabandhu.
He always speaks so nice and stuff like that. But, you know, can be. Srila Prabhupada, when a man is attached to material enjoyment, he is attached to many miserable conditions. But nevertheless, he accepts his condemned position as one of happiness. Sense enjoyment is so strong for such a person that he cannot give it up. Exactly as a worm in stool cannot give up the stool. From the spiritual point of view, when a person is too absorbed in material enjoyment, he is exactly like a worm in stool. Although such a position is utterly miserable to the eyes of liberated souls, the materialistic enjoyer is greatly attached to it. So, for us, we're looking at stool and the worms in it, thinking, yeah, this is such a miserable condition, right? But for the worm, he thinks it's great. You know, life's good.
You know? Even karmis say, you know, stool stinks, but it's warm.
Yeah.
No, it's an English thing.
Yeah, they're just pointing out it has some good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that bad.
Could be worse.
At least it's warm, you know. It's yeah. Like 36.6.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is we'll see it as great, but those who are liberated see it's not. Just as we may have seen so many things as wonderful, but as we advance in Krishna consciousness, we start to see these things aren't actually very wonderful. That's the whole thing. It's the perspective. Because we're saying, no, but it's so nice to have this and that. Then you use it nicely for Krishna. If you see it's an advantage, use it for Krishna. But if you're using it for yourself, then it's not going to help you advance. It's just going to bind you. And then as you advance more, then you'll see, is what I'm doing, is it actually useful in Krishna consciousness? And if it is, you continue. And if it's not, you don't. You find what does work. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that, you know, when the Yudhishthira Maharaj is in the palace, then he uses all those things nicely for Krishna. And then when he's out in the forest, then he lives that life. What's like, you're in the forest, and so then that's going to be very simple. But in there, you have pure water and pure, you know, things and pure environment. And so then you can live that very simple, you know, life of sadhana and all that. But the main benefit in the forest is the amount of saintly persons. He has more saintly persons with him in the forest than he would in the palace. And so, you know, 100,000s of them at one point. And so then, that's the advantage there, so he takes advantage of that. You know, and then whenever he can, when he's in the palace, then he tries to, you know, feed and respect, you know, thousands of Brahmins. So it's just a matter of what's working at the time, you use it. Sri Chaitanya 3.6.198. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, although your father and uncle are charitable to Brahmanas and greatly help them, they are nevertheless not pure Vaishnavas, Shuddha Vaishnava. However, they are almost like Vaishnavas, Vaishnava Praya. Right? So technically, is that, yeah, Srila Prabhupada. As stated by Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur in his Amrita Prabhaha Bhashya, some people, usually very rich men, dress like Vaishnavas and give charity to Brahmins. They are also attached to deity worship. But because of their attachment to material enjoyment, they cannot be pure Vaishnavas. Anyavi lashita shunyam jnana karmadhyana ritam. Bhakti rasam rita sindhu 1.1.11. The pure Vaishnava has no desire for material enjoyment. That is the basic qualification of the pure Vaishnava. There are men, especially rich men, who regularly worship the deity, give charity to Brahmins, and are pious in every respect. But they cannot be pure Vaishnavas. right, because of that material attachment. It means they're attached to the material enjoyment, and that's doing all these things. They know it's beneficial, and in this way they'll go on enjoying. Rather than, you know, this is because of their position, this is what service they can render and do, but they're interested in pure devotion. Despite their outward show of Vaishnavism and charity, their inner desire is to enjoy a higher standard of material life. Raghunandan Das's father, Govardhan, and uncle, Hiranyadas, were both very charitable to Brahmins. Indeed, the Brahmanas from the Gaudiya district were practically dependent upon them. Thus, they were accepted as very pious gentlemen. However, they presented themselves as Vaishnavas to the eyes of the people in general, although from a purely spiritual point of view, they were ordinary human beings, not pure Vaishnavas. Actually, Vaishnavas considered them almost Vaishnavas, not pure Vaishnavas. In other words, they were Kanista Adhikaris, for they were ignorant of higher Vaishnava regulator principles. Nevertheless, they could not be called Vishayis, or blind materialistic enjoyers, right? It means because they've taken up the devotional things, but they're still focused on the material enjoyment. So that's why the idea is that as quickly as possible, one is trying to get to the point where nothing other than pure devotion will make you satisfied. And in that position, once you come to that, then the taste and attachment come up very nicely. So, but you engage everything. So that's why so much emphasis is put in directions of the acharyas and how the kanistas can connect themselves to Krishna, whatever the situation. So when they say Vaishnava Praya, means almost Vaishnavas, means pure Vaishnavas, that's called Vaishnava. And Vaishnava Praya means those who are in pursuit of coming to that platform.
Aspiring,
yes. So that's the whole point. So how much you're aspiring will mean how much you're moving forward and how much you're content to be whatever you are, then it'll be a little slower. You know, so I think we're discussing that, what I said, on Friday, or maybe Thursday, a little bit on how sometimes, well, oh, you know, I'm so fallen, I can't make this life, it'll take me many lives and all that, then they'll move slower. You know, but if at some point in their life if there is that idea, they're actually just being humble, and then Krishna will put them in a position where they'll meet those devotees and be in those situations, they can move forward quicker. You know, but otherwise, then you know, if you're comfortable with the material things, you're doing service, it'll be there. But the point is then pure devotion is then beyond that. And the return, and that's what will make the soul happy. These other things won't. You do for a while, and after a while, you see it's not really that great. You know? Like that. If you have the association of Vaishnavas, it works okay. It works nice. But if you don't, then it really becomes an annoyance.
I have something cooking in my head, but I guess it's not.
Only 2 minutes left.
Yeah, it could be good just to finish that topic, but okay. I don't wanna.
Well, tomorrow.
Bring it up.
Yeah, I'm gonna say tomorrow can bring it up.
Yeah.
Because we'll start from here. But it's interesting is that. So that's why you have the 2 points, is that's why you have both the presentation that Baladevi Dibhushan is giving, is that anything in pursuance of pure devotion is also considered to be, you know, pure devotion. In that you're trying to get to there. It's just like someone taking a bath is going to be considered clean, but it's still going to be time before they actually become clean. Does that make sense? Then there's those who well, you know, how you say, those who take things lightly or cheaply. In other words, those who take it very seriously, then because of that seriousness, their position, then they have great advantage and they'll move forward very nicely and, you know, things will work for them and they'll come to that point of pure devotion. But those who take it that, you know, it's all the same and you don't have to be so serious and all that, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, but then pure devotion, that's the standard. Anything below that's not standard. You know, so it's given like that so that you understand that's the standard, and then there. So that the humility will work. So that humility that I want to attain that platform because that's my natural position, then you move quickly. But otherwise, then it will be slow. So there's always a thing, it's the same process. It's just a matter of how quickly you're going because of mentality. So the same process, there may be different situations some people are in. The concept is the same. Whatever you're in, you engage in Krishna service. But the point is how to be focused that it's about developing love for Krishna and doing things to please Krishna rather than ourselves. And so that will move things along very nicely. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.